Dr. Ann Goshen. Dr. Goshen is a therapist, workshop leader, and professional speaker specializing in relationship issues. She's an experienced and knowledgeable clinician who has developed a comprehensive plan for helping couples to strengthen their long-term relationships. She presents her ideas, as you will see today, in a clear, insightful manner that motivates couples to continue working together to resolve their differences and avoid patterns that can lead to divorce. Dr. Goshen has a private practice here in San Diego and has spoken to groups throughout the United States, in Germany, and in Australia. It is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Ann Goshen.
Thank you so much, Rosalie. That was a wonderful introduction. And as I said, I'm going to have you do all my introductions from now on. That was so great. And thank you for having me here. I was remembering on my way over this morning, that I spoke at a Learn at Lunch here at UCSD. And I was trying to remember when, but it's been at least 10 years, probably longer than that. So it's always nice to come back. That was over in the Price Center. And that was in the days before we had the audience, our virtual audience. And so I also want to welcome our virtual audience out there. Sorry that I can't see your faces, but I'm glad that you're there with us. And those of you who came over, nice to have you here. So I'm going to be talking a little bit with you and also asking you for your questions and your thoughts as well, if you have any as we go along, about relationships and particularly about jump-starting a relationship. So any of us who are in or have been in a relationship, whether it's a primary relationship with a partner, with a spouse, even if it's a relationship perhaps with a child or an adult child, there are times when our relationships kind of get in the doldrums, kind of get in a rut, right? I mean, that happens because we're busy, we take things for granted, we're going about our own way, and we don't always take the time and make our relationship, keeping it fresh, a priority. So we're going to look at some ideas here along those lines today. When I was thinking about doing this the other day and putting together some thoughts for this program, I started looking at what are some things that other people say, you know, some ideas that are out there, and I started reading them, and some of them are pretty standard ideas, and we're going to look at some of those a little bit later. But there were a couple that caught my attention, and I was thinking to myself, I wonder how my husband would respond if I did some of these things. One of them was get a piece of paper and some crayons. Draw a bright childlike picture with a smiley sun and two stick figures holding hands. Add labels with your two names pointing to the stick figures and write, I love you. Now, I don't know about you, but somehow I don't think that would do much for my husband. He'd look at me and think, I think you gave this to the wrong person. This must have been intended for our grandchild, not for me. The one that for me really got the prize in unusual ideas for jump-starting a relationship was somebody who was talking about having decided to change all the light bulbs in their home to the energy-efficient light bulbs and get her husband involved in recycling as a joint project. And again, I thought, okay, I think it takes more than that to jumpstart a relationship. So we're going to look first at what I think are the important points to remember about how a relationship gets in a rut in the first place. Because if we don't understand that, we don't really understand what we need to do to get out of it. And I put this picture up here of a race car. It didn't quite translate on the large screen as well, but because a relationship, just like a race car, is finely tuned. And it's something that requires some degree of continual and constant attention in order for it to go, in order for it to be ready when you want to get in it and you want to race and you want it to run perfectly. And if you're not taking care of some of those basic things, whether it's doing the oil changes whether it's doing the tune-ups, whether it's making sure the tires are there, it's not going to perform for you. And relationships are very much that way. We need to pay attention to sometimes the small things. Or this is going to happen, right? This is going to happen. I had this happen to me a couple weeks ago. I wasn't paying attention to a very small thing on my car, like making sure the inside light was out when I went out of town. Ended up having to get my car jump-started when I came back. So one of the things that I like to think about when I think about relationships that has to do with getting our relationships out of the rut is looking at our expectations. Because if you think about relationships, most relationships, romantic, primary, partner relationships I'm talking about here, go through fairly predictable stages. Okay? So for most of us in a relationship, if we've been in one for a while, if you think back to when you first got together and first sort of noticed that this was somebody special and somebody that I want to spend some time with, the first stage for most of us is some degree of physical attraction. And there are certain chemical changes that occur when we go through these changes. And those are important to know because as we progress to other stages in our relationships, that chemistry changes, and that can make it more challenging. So the first stage is, I think, a pretty easy one. The next stage is usually more of a romantic attraction, and that's more where we're attracted on a more emotional level. And what we start to see are, again, some different changes and in our brain chemistry. And you don't need to remember the names of these brain chemicals here, but what's important to know is that some of you may have heard of serotonin, which is a chemical that has to do with mood regulation. And one of the things that we see when we're romantically attracted and we're in that phase of a relationship is that our mood regulating hormone is actually decreased, which means that we have a harder time regulating our moods, our emotions. We're more up and down. Their highs and their lows. And of course, what we remember are those highs, and we start to expect that that's the way it's going to be all the time. It's always going to be high. It's always going to be exciting. The dopamine and norepinephrine chemicals in our brain are chemicals that have to do with high excitement and high energy. And so we begin to think, oh, this is great. This feels good to feel excited, to feel really up, to want to be with this person all the time. It feels really fun and good, and I want this all the time, and I expect it all the time. But eventually, relationships typically move, if they last, some of them don't last. We're going to look at that in a minute, because there's some things to pay attention to make sure that your relationship is not only satisfying over the long term, not just the short term, but also that it has stability and security to it. And so when we move into a phase of a relationship where we've gotten through the romantic part, we've learned how to negotiate our differences, we've learned how hopefully to deal with conflict, and we get to that attachment stage, and that's kind of just the comfortable settling in stage. And of course, this is the stage where we often start to feel like we're getting in a rut. And so one of the chemicals that happens brain-wise at that stage is there's an increase in a chemical called oxytocin. Oxytocin, some of you may know, is a brain chemical that is related to women when they're breastfeeding. It's released during childbirth. It's often called the cuddle chemical. It's a chemical in our brain that usually makes us want to feel close and attached to the other person. And so it's a very important chemical that has to do with attachment, has to do with long-term relationships, but it's not always the most exciting one. It's just kind of a settling in, being comfortable with the other person. And the challenge then is when, as I get comfortable, how do I keep a little bit of that excitement there as well? How do I keep my relationship from getting into a rut? So as I think about what some of those elements are that have to do with what makes a relationship healthy, what makes it stable, long-lasting, going through those stages, reaching that time of attachment, and what are the factors that sometimes lead to relationships not being so healthy, not going so well, there are a couple of factors that from the research on relationships we see that are very highly associated with these two types of relationships. This is based on research by a gentleman named Dr. John Gottman at the University of Washington up in Seattle. And he did a longitudinal study over about a 20-year period of time looking at what are the specific factors. Because if I'm not paying attention to these really important parts of my relationship, I am going to get stuck in a rut much more easily. So some of the factors that have to do with healthy relationships, with relationships that have high satisfaction for the partners, and also longevity and stability. One is accepting differences. That's probably the most challenging part of a relationship. How many of you are in a relationship or have been in the past where you have found some degree of challenge in accepting those differences? I think we probably all, yeah. It's so hard because why can't they just do it the way I do it? It would make life so much simpler. What's the big deal, right? What's the big deal? And so accepting differences is not about trying to convince your partner to do it your way. It's really about not just accepting, and I'd like to add another word to that. It's about valuing and appreciating those differences. Boy, that's hard sometimes, isn't it? That can be really, really challenging. My husband has certain ways of doing things, and I, you know, there are days I can be really accepting and really fine and really valuing. Isn't that nice that he's this way and I'm this way? And there's sometimes it's a little more challenging. Positives to negatives. And this goes a lot to looking at how to jumpstart a relationship, because often we get into a rut, into a stagnant part in our relationship, when the negative interactions begin to take over and dominate the relationship. And it's so easy to do that. And so very interesting, one of the things that Dr. Gottman found in this longitudinal research was that there actually was almost a specific ratio, and that it took about 5 positive interactions to balance out 1 negative. Now, isn't that interesting? It takes about 5 to 1. Why do you think that is? Anyone have a guess about that? Why would it take so many more positives to create a sense of balance? Well, which one has more charge for us? Which one has more emotional charge? It's the negative ones, isn't it? Which one do we remember and we replay sometimes in our mind, right? It's like, oh, I can't believe he did that. I can't believe she did that. We replay it. And of course, we replay it and it just grows and increases in energy and intensity for us. So it takes about 5 to 1. I want to tell you an interesting story about a couple I was working with in therapy a number of years ago. And we were talking about some of these factors in their relationship. And this was a couple who was very, very much stuck. Stuck in a rut, stuck in a negative cycle. They had, I think, 3 children. Very involved, very committed to their kids. But the marriage was just not going anywhere positive. And I was talking to them about this concept, and it was so hard for them to understand it. So one day, or to do it, I think they understand it cognitively, but it was really hard for them to do it. So one day we had a session, and I gave them a homework assignment. I said, this is what I want you to do this week. I want you to think about what we were talking about in terms of 5 positive interactions. So make a point, almost count in your mind to make you more conscious of it. And until you have had 5 positive interactions, I don't want you to say anything negative to your children. So rather than having them do it with each other, I had them do it with their children because I thought that's going to be easier for them to do. That will be easier for them to do it with their kids. And they came back the next week, and I said, so how did they go? How did this go? And how did the week go? And they both said, you know, it's really interesting. We started doing this with our kids, and we sat down at the dinner table, and we talked about appreciations, and we all shared that, and then we had them start doing it with each other. And then we started, I don't know why, we just started doing it with each other. So it was so interesting to me that they couldn't get there through the front door with each other, but when they started doing that with their kids, and they saw the impact on their children, and on the relationships among the 3 children, they were able to do it with themselves. So think about that in your own mind, whether it's with your kids, whether it's with your partner, whether it's with your roommate. Do you come home and say, oh my gosh, why is that still sitting there? You know, why are there still dirty dishes in here? What have you been doing? Have you finished your homework? Right? How come you have the TV on? Is that your first interaction? Or are your first interactions, because those first interactions when you come together are so critical. We're going to look at that in a minute, those transition points. Ability to negotiate and compromise, I think that's an obvious one. And that's an important stage for a relationship to get through before it gets to that point of mutual comfort and stability. We need to be able to negotiate and compromise. Deal with conflict, basically, right? So hard to do. So hard to do. Very, very important. Critical skill. And of course, a lot in when you go to see a couples therapist, for example, that's a lot of what couples therapists do, is help people learn how to negotiate and compromise. Communicate, being able to communicate for understanding about the areas in your life that maybe are not solvable, they're just always there. There's some problems in a relationship that don't have a nice solution. It's not something you can work out, deal with, say, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. There's a resolution, over and done with. There's some issues in any relationship, in any family, in any partnership, that are just kind of always there. They get recycled and recycled and recycled. It may be, you know, in a blended family dealing with stepkids and half-children and siblings. It may be dealing with family of origin, with allegiances to parents or to adult siblings and so on. Whatever it is, the ability to just try to work towards understanding is so important. So those are the four, let me just go back to this. Those are the four, according to the research, four specific factors that are highly associated with those relationships that really are at the top, the race car relationships, the one where people are just highly satisfied, stable, able to get out of ruts when they get into them. We all get into them. I think one of the important things about getting out of a rut when we're in one in a relationship is recognizing that it's normal to be in a rut. Because I think sometimes, and I have people come to my office sometimes, and they'll say, oh, I'm bored with my marriage. I'm thinking about leaving, I'm bored. Right? I'm thinking about leaving. It's always easier to leave than it is to stay and work it out. But I think, you know, we have a culture now where, you know, I mean, my computer here, it's about 6 months old, and I was showing it to a friend of mine the other day, and he said, oh, you have a really old computer, aren't you? Isn't it time to get a new one? I said, I just got that 6 months ago. He said, oh, well, there's lots of new things. You know, it's like, you're ready for the next one. We have that kind of a culture, don't we? And if we try to see our relationships that way, we can interpret being in a rut, being in a low time, as meaning, I'm not in love anymore, I need to get out of this, I need to make a huge change. And maybe all we need to do is jumpstart. So just as contrast, I wanted to share with you some of what he found about the other side, and that is, what are the specific behaviors in relationships that are very highly associated with those marriages, those relationships that do not last, where people are highly dissatisfied, where they divorce or separate? And there are actually some very specific behaviors, and when he looked at couples, what he found is that two people were involved in a discussion about a difficult issue, the degree to which these particular behaviors were used in those interactions was very much associated with how long that relationship was going to last. One was ongoing criticism. We all criticize at times, but that constant criticism, defensiveness. And of course, we all do some of this, but these couples were ones where it was characteristic of their relationship. You've probably been around people where it's uncomfortable being with them because there's so much criticism going on of their partner. And of course, criticism and defensiveness are often two sides of the same coin. Contempt, which is an extreme form, not just of criticism for what the person is doing, but contempt for who they are. and withdrawing, just not interacting at all, withdrawing from the relationship. So if these are largely characteristic of a relationship, it has a very poor prognosis for either satisfaction or for longevity. And of course, the more we're locked into this, the harder it is to jumpstart. So jumpstarting in some ways begins with looking at, am I doing some of these kind of toxic behaviors in my relationship? And maybe I need to first start by paying attention to that. Start making those kinds of changes. Yes, Rosalie?
Dr. Goshen, would you be willing to share with us some of the ways in which couples stonewall?
Okay, good one. Stonewalling can be done in a lot of different ways. Generally, what it means is withdrawing from the interaction. It's like avoiding talking when your partner brings up issues, not bringing up issues. Probably the most common that I see is somebody who has concerns and has issues. Things aren't working well for them, and they don't talk about it at all. They just keep it inside, and they think, well, I'm not going to bring this up. It's not going to get anywhere. There's no point in it. But what I find happens is when we keep something that's really important inside and we don't share it with our partner, it leaks out, right? It leaks out in all kinds of ways. And so we start to get distant from that person. We start to just, you know, be a little more distracted, perhaps. We're just not 100% there. And I think we've all have known people at times who you just think they're not completely here. Something else is going on. So stonewalling really is about withdrawing from the interaction in some way, going through the motions. And it's one of the hardest things, interestingly enough, one of the hardest things, especially for women to deal with, is when their male partner stonewalls or withdraws from them. More typically difficult for us women to deal with. Anyone have a guess what one is more typically difficult for a man to deal with? What do you think? Criticism, yeah, criticism, right? None of us like criticism, but in general, men, not to stereotype, men will report much more awareness and sensitivity to criticism. And it's so interesting. My husband and I were talking about this the other night because, I mean, I'm not being critical. I'm trying to help him, right? You know? So he has some clothes. Some of you guys may relate to this, or you women. He has some clothes that I don't really like. And so I was trying to point out to him that those clothes really needed to go to the Goodwill and not be worn anymore, that it was ready to recycle these clothes. And I thought I was being really helpful. In fact, I bought him some new things and brought them home, and I'm showing him the new things. For him, that was criticism. I mean, I can see that now, of course, because a lot of times when we think we're helping somebody, right, we think, well, I'm just trying to be helpful. Well, if the other person doesn't want your help, it feels like criticism, feels like a put down. So, I mean, we're fine on most things, but the close thing we're still working on. So, one of the important aspects, I think, of learning how to jumpstart your own relationship, we can talk about all kinds of ideas, but it's important to know what works for your partner, because we're all different in this respect, right? And let me give you an example of this. We all speak in what might be termed love languages. In other words, there's certain ways that you may express your love to somebody, to your child or to your partner or to your parents, but that may not feel like a loving gesture to them, right? That may not feel like a loving gesture. So here you are doing something loving, and they're going, you know, that doesn't work for me. Something else might work for them. So important to know what works for your partner, because what we do is what works for us, right? What we do is what works for us, and we expect it to work for the other person. So really good conversation to have if you're in a relationship, a really good conversation to have with your partner is, in fact, when I was thinking about this program last night, my husband and I started a conversation. We were talking about this, and we were talking about, and I asked him the question. I said, I'm doing this talk tomorrow on jumpstarting your relationship, and I'm curious because I, you know, we do little things for each other all the time. And I said, of the things that you can think of that I've done recently, what are some of them that most stand out for you that really meant a lot to you? And this is so interesting because I'm thinking of some of these big things that I've done for him lately, And he thought about it, he thought about it. He said, you know, he said, there was something you did last week that I really meant a lot to me. And I said, what was that? He said, well, he makes his own lunch. He takes a little lunchbox to work every day. And I saw his lunchbox sitting out before he left for work. So I had this fresh piece of blueberry cake in the fridge. And I thought, I bet he'd like that as a little treat at lunch. So I sneaked it into his lunchbox. And when he got to work and at lunchtime, he was eating his lunch and he found this little piece of blueberry cake. He said, when I opened up my lunchbox and I saw that piece of blueberry cake that you had sneaked in, he said, that just felt so good to me. He said, and I said, why was that, you know? I mean, I thought you might like a little treat at work. He said, it was more than that. It was because, one, I knew you were thinking about me. It was like a little piece of you, you know, in my day, in the middle of the day. And he said, I think the most important thing was it was unexpected. It was unexpected, right? And so often when we do the unexpected, especially if it's something we know our partner would appreciate, again, tiny, tiny little thing, but it was unexpected. It was a reminder of him that I had been thinking about him that morning. So I thought that was so interesting. So some of the common types of love languages, and I want you, as I talk about these, to think about, what do you think works best for you? You know, you might have a couple, but what works best for you? What is the type of language that it's easiest for you to hear your partner's love and appreciation and caring and thoughtfulness? How do you best hear that? And more importantly, probably, what language do you think your partner has? What are the things or the behaviors or the languages that are the most meaningful to your partner? So verbal appreciations is a common one, right? Verbal appreciations, letting the other person know, gee, I really appreciate that you did this. Thank you for doing that. A little of that can go a long way because those are the kinds of things we forget to say, even if it's something really tiny, really, really tiny. My husband said something the other day, and I thought, oh, that was really sweet. I was doing the laundry, washing sheets and towels, and he said, I really appreciate that you always make sure that the sheets are clean. And we have clean sheets. You know, I thought, you know, it's something I didn't even think I needed appreciation for because I just do it. But it was, again, unexpected. And it was that he thought about that and didn't just get in bed thinking, you know, well, they just sort of magically appear clean sheets, right? Which sometimes we do. So it's magically the trash gets taken out or whatever. Magically dinner's on the table. But that you notice and you let the other person know that you noticed. Quality time together. Making time with each other a priority. I was reading, there was an article, this was actually in the Wall Street Journal, but it was an article about a study that was done recently where they were looking at the amount of quality time. So quality time, doing something together where you're really connected and you're sharing an activity. Quality time together of couples and... what was the period of time? From 1980 to 2000. Okay, between 1980 and 2000, so over a 20-year period of time, this was a study done at Penn State. What they found is that the amount of time spent together fell by 28%. That's a lot of time. That's almost a third of the time less that couples are spending together. Okay, so... of course, if you're spending less quality time together, it's easier to get stuck in a rut, isn't it? It's easier to get stuck in a rut. Of course, you have less time, I guess, to have conflicts, but, you know, sometimes we always manage to fit that in, I think. You know, I don't know why. It's like that old Beatles song. Any of you Beatles fans? There was a Beatles song called There's No Time for Fussing and Fighting. And every time I hear that, I think, there's always time for that. we always seem to make time for that. But just spending time together and making because what that says to your partner is, you're a priority to me. Your time's a priority to me. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm guessing everybody in this room has very, very busy lives, right? I work. I have a private practice. I also work part-time at Kaiser Permanente. I am married, have a grandchild, another grandchild on the way. I take care of my 2-year-old grandchild one day a week. Have a new house, just closed escrow last week. So it's like my life is very, very full, very full. So my time is very limited, but I know how important that is, just to say. In fact, I was saying to my husband the other day, I said, oh, guess what? This weekend we have nothing scheduled. We have nothing scheduled. Let's talk about how we're going to spend some time together. It managed to fill up pretty quickly, but it's making the person a priority because time is probably our most valuable commodity. Giving and receiving gifts. I should say giving and receiving, although, because I enjoy giving as much as receiving. And this was an interesting one in our discussion last night because I had ordered recently, getting back to the clothes thing with my poor husband, I had ordered him this really cute hat from Land's End that is a waterproof hat because he likes to jog every morning and he goes out and he jogs even when it's raining. So I saw this cute hat. It was waterproof, water repellent, perfect, right? Be a nice hat for him. I liked it better than the one he wore, but also it was water resistant. So when he came home last night, I said, guess what? I got you a new hat. What do you think he said? Yeah, well, I don't need a new hat. I don't need a hat. I've got lots of hats, right? How did I feel? I was like, come on, I got this for you. I was thinking about you. I ordered it for you. I went to all this trouble, right? Of course, I love online shopping, so it wasn't that much trouble. But, and you don't appreciate it, right? Here, I've done this for you. I've offered you something, and you didn't appreciate it, all right? And because I was doing that, as much for myself in a way, but I was also doing that because that would be something that I would tend to do. In fact, we've talked about this a lot. My husband said the other day, he said, I have to be really careful about telling you that I like something because the next day it'll appear, you know. If he says, you know, gee, I really like, you know, this CD. I haven't heard this CD for a while. Well, you know, the next time I'm on my computer, I am looking up, finding that CD, tracking it down. I tracked down one recently that was recorded in 1963 in England, and I tracked this person down that was one of his favorite French horn players, and I ordered this CD, and I got this CD. He did like that. He did like that. He did appreciate that. But he realized, he said, I have to be really careful because before I know it, you've gone and ordered it, and, you know, it's arrived, and here it is, and, you know, in our house. Because I enjoy doing that. And what I'm learning is it's not as big a thing for him to receive gifts as it is for me. Yes. That could be it. That could be it, because we were talking about the importance of the unexpected. Yes, the importance of the unexpected. I think part of it is that one of those differences, remember we talked about valuing differences between yourself and your partner. My husband tends to be kind of a practical guy, so if he has one shirt, you know, why does he need two? He's that kind of guy. You know, I'm not like that. I'm going, well, I have a, you know, a pink shirt and a hot pink shirt and a warm pink shirt and a pale pink shirt, but I don't have quite that color pink, right? Yeah. So I think that's part of it for him. It's like he's feeling like he doesn't need it. He doesn't need it. So we're working on that, giving and receiving gifts. In fact, one of his daughters he had a birthday recently, didn't give him a gift. She sent a card, but she didn't send him a gift. And I said to him the other day, I said, you know, that seems so odd to me that your daughter, and she's an adult, your daughter didn't, you didn't get a gift from her. And he says, I never even thought about it. He never thought I would think about it if my daughter didn't give me a gift. He said, I didn't even think about it. Didn't notice it. Not a big thing for him. Not that he doesn't like to get things, but that's not the way to get points with my husband. Not about receiving gifts. We'll get to the one that works for him. He likes the first one. He likes verbal appreciation. Acts of service, which is doing things for the other person, okay? So have to be careful what you do. So my husband, I've only been married fairly recently, so this is a new marriage. So we're still learning about a lot of this stuff, right? So when we first moved in together, got married, moved in together, he wanted to do something really nice for me, unexpected, act of service, really nice. So you know what he did? And I want you to think about how you would feel if you came home and your partner said to this. I come home, been out grocery shopping or someplace, and I come home and he says, oh, I noticed you had a basket of clothes in the laundry room, so I did your laundry for you. Now, yeah, How many of you would go, oh, isn't that sweet? Anybody go, oh, that's so sweet? No? No? How many of you would go, what? You did my laundry? I can't believe you did my laundry. Yeah, that was my reaction, right? Now, in his mind, that was just this really loving thing to do, right? I mean, he was doing it out of love and wanting to do something special, wanting to help me out because I was out running around doing errands. I was not happy. And I said, oh, no, you don't understand. I am very particular about how I do my laundry. This goes with this, and this is hot water, and that's cold water, and this is taken out of the dryer immediately, and this never goes in the dryer, and, you know, I mean. So we learned real fast. We learned real fast that if you do an act of service, you have to be sure it's something that the other person would appreciate. Learning each other's love language. So physical touch. So no big surprise, he's a guy. This is a big one for him. So I would say for my husband, probably 1 in 5 are most important, those verbal appreciations. And physical touch, for me, a lot of it is prioritizing time together. That's a big one. And, you know, I can't deny it. I like getting gifts. I like it more than he does. I like surprise gifts. They're fun. It doesn't have to be anything big. It's just kind of fun to get it. So think about what works for you. And what do you think works for your husband? And if you're in a relationship, great discussion to have this evening. Great discussion to have is talk about what kind of language do you use and do you understand as acts of love and acts of giving to and for your partner. Anyone have a thought or want to share what you think would work for your partner? Anybody think about what might work for your partner as you look at these 5 different love languages?
Quality time. Well, my husband.
Quality time?
Yeah. Just watching me, just like being together.
Okay.
Not doing anything.
Uh-huh. You're not talking.
You're just in the same room together.
Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh. Yes, right. So being together. And I think that what you brought up is interesting because that's a common male-female difference that, you know, if we're sitting next to each other watching, oh, we watched part of Wimbledon on Sunday, watching, you know, a game on TV, that's being together for a guy. And you're going, well, we're not even talking, right? We're sitting here. I could be anywhere. For him, that's together, that's quality time, and for you, it's time away from something else. So that's important to define that. Yeah. Well, we had the same thing. So you know what I did? I don't know that this works with everybody, but my husband actually doesn't mind ironing. So when we were watching Wimbledon, he did all my ironing for me, and I sat on the couch and was there with him while he did the ironing. I thought, actually, I was on the treadmill part of the time, and he was ironing. So he ironed this blouse. I think he did a pretty good job, didn't he? Another aspect of keeping your relationship current, keeping it alive, keeping it vital, in other words, keeping it out of the rut, keeping it from running out of gas, a lot of it, I think, has to do with particularly being conscious of those critical times. There are certain critical times that kind of set a tone. And I think, and as you see on this list, most of these are just very routine, everyday parts of our day, right? Waking up in the morning, leaving for the day. They're just kind of routine parts of our day. But they are critical times because they're transition points. They're transition points in life. And those transition points are important because, again, they set a tone. They set a tone that carries you through, or that starts the day in a certain way, or starts the evening in a certain way. So waking up in the morning, right? That's a major transition. Anybody here a real morning person who you get up before the alarm and you're just jumped out of bed and ready to go? Anybody here? You, okay. So anybody here just the opposite like I am, where it's kind of like, you know, when the alarm goes off, I have 3 alarms. My husband gets up before the first one. I usually don't even hear the alarm till the third one. We have nature sounds, then 10 minutes later the radio comes on, then 10 minutes later a very loud buzzer comes on. The buzzer goes on long enough, it usually wakes me up. So I'm like pulling the sheet over my head and, you know, saying, oh, pull the shades down, it's too bright in here. And he's up raring to go, let's do something. What do you want to do? Let's go to the gym. And I'm going, ugh. So again, part of that is valuing those differences in how we deal with the morning. But part of my stretch in our relationship is knowing that that morning is an important time. So if it were up to me, now my daughter, I have a daughter who's frighteningly 35 years old. I can't believe it. And when she and I sometimes go on trips together. When we go on a trip together, she's just like me. So we go on a trip together, we wake up together, we don't even speak to each other for at least an hour. I mean, we just put, sort of bumble around and knock into each other, and we don't take it personally because we're both like that. Neither of us is ready to talk. My husband is, you know, wants to interact and talk about what's in the paper and so on and so forth. So I've been really stretching. That's a loving thing that I do in our relationship, to be a little more participative, let's say, in the morning. It's a stretch. It's a big stretch for me. And one of the things that helps me do that is when he realizes that that's a stretch for me and appreciates it, right? So that's an important part. In fact, the other day, because I kind of felt like we were getting into a rut with that, and I said, you know, we were at breakfast and we were talking about the newspaper. I said, I don't know if you realize how hard it is for me to sit here and have this conversation about the news, what's in the newspaper at this hour of the morning when I've only been awake for 10 minutes. So I just want you to know. I just want you to appreciate that. That's all. But important time, leaving for the day, right? Especially, and I think we've probably all experienced this at times when you're in a relationship, when you live with somebody, that there's a little squabble in the morning or misunderstanding or tension in the morning, and you go away and you kind of carry that residue with you, don't you? Carry it with you into your day. So probably one of the most important times to be really sensitive to how do I take leave of my partner? How do we separate when we separate for the day? So that we both can leave with a little bit of positive feeling about that interaction. So it's probably not the best time to bring up an issue. It's not the best time to register a complaint, for example. There's plenty of time to do that. Like, oh, you know, I asked you to do that yesterday. You didn't do it, did you? Right? But probably waiting until a more appropriate time. So leaving for the day and how you leave for the day and the residue you carry from that into the rest of your day. Returning home at night. And again, could be with your partner, could be with your kids. How do you return at home at night? How do you reconnect? Because when we're apart, even if it's a small amount of time, there's a bit of needing to reconnect. As I was mentioning, I have this little two and a half year old granddaughter, and her mom the last couple of weeks has had to go out of town for a couple of days at a time. And it's been interesting to see how they reconnect. And my daughter's, you know, wanting all this attention from her daughter. And my little granddaughter, Ashley, is kind of, you know, the other day I brought her over and she hadn't seen her mom for 2 or 3 days. And she's hiding behind me. You know, Ashley's hiding behind me. And she sort of peeks out and looks at her mom and she hides behind me. It's kind of like, wait a minute, who is that person? She left me. I don't know. It feels a little unsafe. So there's a little bit of reconnecting, and even when we come home at the end of the day, do we reconnect? Do we welcome our partner back into our life? Do we welcome them? What do we do? Are we conscious of that? Do we think about it? Do we think about, you know, how can I be welcoming? Again, going to bed at night. That's another kind of separation. It's another kind of separation, right? Do you go to bed together? Do you go to bed separately? One of the things that we do when we go to bed is we meditate together every night. So that's something I've kind of brought into our relationship because I like to meditate. So now we meditate. We get in bed and sit up on our pillows and we meditate for about 15 minutes together. It's kind of a nice transition, leaving the day behind and moving into going to sleep. And especially before, during, and after an extended time apart. So I put during because if we were apart for an extended period of time, what are the ways that we stay connected? You know, and of course, now it's so amazing with for example, families that I've worked with who have family members who are deployed overseas in the military, and the ways that they can connect now, I mean, it's just amazing. Whereas, you know, when you think back to previous wars where you wouldn't even get a letter maybe for a month or something after it was written, and now they have video cams and they have email, and there's it's much easier to connect. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and she and her husband, because of a work situation, they had to be separated for, oh, it was several weeks. I think it was maybe 3 or 4 weeks. It was quite an extended period of time that they didn't see each other. And he was in a different country. He was in Australia. So phone calling is challenging with time zones and expense and so on. So they did a lot of emailing. Of course, they're married. They live together. So they don't tend to email each other very much. But during this extended time away, they started emailing each other. And what they discovered is, in that process, it really created a huge jump start in their relationship. They didn't expect it. They didn't do it for that reason. But they started sharing their thoughts about the day. They started sharing feelings. They had time to read what the other person had written, sometimes when it wasn't completely positive, and think about it and digest it, rather than what we tend to do if we're face-to-face, is we react, right? And sometimes we react, not always in the best way. So it was very interesting. I had an opportunity to talk with actually both of them when they came back together, and they were both commenting on how surprising and positive that opportunity had been, and that they'd actually shared their thoughts and feelings about things that they didn't really talk about very much in their day-to-day life. They didn't take the time to do that. So sometimes a time away, in this case, actually became a positive for them. They turned that into a positive. I had a couple I was working with a number of years ago where the husband had a job that took him out of town during the week. So he was gone, I think, like from Monday morning, it came back on Thursday night, totally exhausted by the time he got home. And so he would come home, he'd arrive at the airport, he'd get in his car, he'd drive home, he would have been working nonstop, traveling, which is, you know, challenging in itself. Arrive back home, usually he'd get there around 7:30, you know, middle of the evening. They had a couple little kids, and his wife would hold dinner for him, so the kids hadn't eaten, so he had these little kids who were way past their dinner time. She'd hold dinner for him. He'd arrive. Kids would be all over him, and, you know, they might be demanding, what'd you bring me? Did you bring me a present? I'm hungry. They might be fussing. He comes home. He's tired. He's cranky, and it was very, very easy for that first coming together for the family to just really take a bad turn. Very, very easy. So what we worked out was very interesting. He happened to have family who lived in town that close to the airport. So what we worked out that worked really well for them is he decided when he came home from a trip, he would stop at his mother's house on his way home and have dinner because he didn't get to see his mother much alone, and his mother really liked having him over for dinner. So he'd stop there, have dinner with her, get home. The kids would already be fed. His wife would be fed. They'd be bathing in their PJs and ready for a good night's story. He would be relaxed because he'd had a little bit of time. He enjoyed being with his mother. He would have been fed already. And the whole evening went so much better. It took a little more time. It meant a delay of an hour and a half maybe. But the difference was so critical because none of them were at their best when they were reconnecting. And so it was so easy for that to take a wrong turn. So I talked about Dr. John Gottman before, and I just wanted to share because I like the way he puts this, talking about recharging a relationship or jumpstarting a relationship. It's about getting playfulness. We so often get so serious, don't we? Humor, a sense of adventure, and gestures of courtship. Wow, gestures of courtship. All those things we do when we're courting somebody that we forget about. Not that you're going to continue doing all the same, but occasionally, again, the unexpected is really, really nice. Getting those back into the relationship. Couples who have been together for many years often have what we call an emotional bank account. Now, that emotional bank account is kind of like the feelings of goodwill, that the goodwill and positive interactions that they've built up. If that bank account has a lot in it, it's a really full bank account, they can weather a lot of ruts in the relationship. They can weather a lot of negative times. They can weather a lot of stress. But every time that happens, there's a withdrawal from that bank account. So what we're talking about is paying attention to that and making sure that you're replenishing, that you're putting deposits back into your emotional bank account. You can draw on that account to jumpstart affection and institute rituals of connection. That taking that time, which can be something really small, a daily walk, having dinner, sitting at the table instead of sitting in front of the TV, coming home. Here's something that's really a nice thing to do, is thinking about before you see your partner, thinking about just an appreciation, just some small thing that maybe you noticed but you didn't say anything about, and just come home today and say, you know what, I have an appreciation for you. I just want to tell you I really appreciate it when you did such and such a couple days ago. A small thing can often go a really long way because it tells the person, I'm thinking about you and I'm making an effort and I'm reaching out. Having a sense of shared meaning and purpose really helps with that emotional bank account sharing. We know that in teams, in businesses, having a sense of shared meaning, where we're going, shared direction. We often spend more time figuring out where we're going to go out for dinner Saturday night than what we're going to be in our life in 5 years or 10 years, right? We just kind of take that for granted. Those are useful discussions to have that replenish our emotional bank account, that keep us on the same track. Shared values and activities. Making the effort to learn about your partner's activities, right? Watching, for me, it was watching Wimbledon on Sunday. My husband's a tennis player, right? So I learned a lot of, I mean, I've watched a little bit of tennis, but I'm asking the whole time, well, what's that and what's this and what does it mean? You know, what's a point break and what does that mean? And, you know, I think I kind of undid a little bit of that when he looked at me and he said, did anybody watch Wimbledon? Federer, Nadal, right? Yeah. So my husband looks at me and he says, so who are you rooting for? Who do you want to win? And I said, well, Nadal, of course. He goes, why? I said, because he's so cute. So I didn't need to say that. But and that sense of we-ness, of being a team. When I see couples, sometimes I'll ask them, tell me about the parts of your life where you feel like you're a team, where you're working together. Right? Where are you working together? Where are you a team? So important to keep a relationship alive and vital. Sense of we-ness. And a little bit of advice from our experts as we close. We have a few minutes here. We started a few minutes late. Can we go over a few minutes or do we? Okay, I wasn't sure how that worked.
We have another half hour.
Half hour. Okay. Okay, great. So a little bit of advice from the experts here. What is love was the question posed to these people. Elaine, age 5, says, love is when mommy gives daddy the best piece of chicken. Right? She knows, even at 5. Marianne, age 4, love is when your puppy licks your face even after you've left him alone all day. Right? Transition moment, right? Transition moment. Animals are great at it. Noelle, age 7, love is when you tell a guy you like his shirt and then he wears it every day. I love that one. I can show that one to my husband. Tommy, age 6. Love is like a little old woman and a little old man who are still friends even after they've known each other so well. So what we're talking about here is how can we still stay friends? How can we still stay friends even after we've known each other so long? So some more advice from the experts, asking them, and how do you make love last? How do you keep it vital? How do you keep it alive? Okay. So Jessica, age 8, says, you really shouldn't say I love you unless you mean it. But if you mean it, you should say it a lot. People forget. People forget. Isn't that great? People forget. Even though we don't really forget, it's sure nice to be reminded, right? It's sure nice to be reminded. Tommy, age 7, spend most of, this is probably one I shouldn't share in a workplace, but spend most of your time loving instead of going to work. And it really, what he's talking about in his 7-year-old terminology, right, is making that quality time, time together, a priority. And I like to think about it not just as quality time, but consistent time. Because quality time, I don't know, we hear that word a lot. And often quality time, you don't know if it was quality until afterwards, right? Because it sort of depends on what happened. But it's about making it a priority time, making it consistent, making a point to set that time aside. Not just waiting. It's kind of like with our paychecks, how often we wait until the end of the month and whatever's left, that's what we put in our retirement account or our bank account or savings account, right? So the financial experts say, no, that's not what you're supposed to do. You pay yourself first. Same with relationships. You don't just wait till see what time and energy I have left after I've done everything else, but putting that first, making that a priority. Don't forget your wife's name. That will mess up the love. Roger, age 8. And Kenny, 7. I love this one. It gives me a headache to think about that stuff. I'm just a kid. I don't need that kind of trouble. So he's not ready for it, right? He's not ready for it. So I want to talk about some specific ideas. We've kind of sprinkled a lot through here. But what I'd like you to do is, as we talk about these, I want you to think about, and if you want, jot it down, but I want you to think about, how would that work for me? Could I imagine doing that myself? And what do I think the impact would be if I were to do that with my partner? And what do I think the impact would be if my partner did that with me? Would that help jumpstart my relationship? Would that help get things going? So the first one is, admit that your relationship needs a jumpstart. So that seems kind of obvious in a way, but sometimes that's actually all we need to do, is to sit down and say, you know what? I think we're kind of getting stuck in a rut. You know? I've just noticed that we're kind of getting into a routine, and I just don't feel as, I don't know, we're not having as much fun. I just don't feel like we're as, our relationship says as live or as energetic as it could be. I'd like to talk about that. So you may not have a specific idea, but often if we just put that on the table and we just start talking about just having that dialogue, it's like I was telling you last night when I was telling my husband about this presentation, and I started having a conversation with him about what are some of the things. We ended up staying up for 2 hours after we would have ordinarily gone to bed having that discussion last night. It was really interesting. And wasn't so much that first one, but it was more about what would it take and what are the things and what are the things that are meaningful to you and what are the things that are meaningful to me. And so we had a very, very heart-to-heart conversation. And then we, went to get ready for bed, which for him is taking the dog out and putting her to bed, and for me going upstairs and washing my face and getting on my PJs and so on. And then I came into the bedroom to get in bed, and here on my pillow was a card that said, sweetie, on the outside of the envelope. And I thought, oh, that wasn't that sweet. So after having this conversation, he thought, I want to do something. So sometimes just bringing up the dialogue can help move things. Because what you're doing when you bring up a dialogue on an issue is you're creating, in a sense, that sense of we-ness that I talked about a minute ago, right? You're saying, we could do a better job. We could do it. Not, you don't bring me flowers anymore, right? That Neil Diamond, and who was it he sang that with? Barbara Streisand song. You don't bring me flowers anymore. You don't, say I love you anymore. All those things you don't do. And, of course, it's so easy for us to know what the other person's not doing. You used to always, you never do this anymore. Well, I can't remember the last time you. But it's about, again, bringing it back to a sense of we-ness. We, I think, could do a better job at keeping our relationship strong and healthy. We might be able to do some things. Let's talk about it. Let's think about it. To get things going again, to get things energized. What could we do? What could we do? Let's talk about that. Let's think about that. What can we do together? Because the more you get that sense of we-ness, the more you're two people working together. Again, that's shared vision, shared values. So important. Also important to have that sense of we-ness and that sense of sharing when you're dealing with conflict. And, of course, it's really hard there. But that's a big part of what I think de-energizes a relationship, is when there's conflict, ongoing conflict especially, that never gets discussed or doesn't get resolved. It's just always hanging on there. It's in the background, right? And it kind of is like a wet blanket over everything. So sometimes the admitting your relationship needs a jump start maybe is about sitting down and having somebody used this phrase the other day. What was it? It was such a great phrase. The courageous conversations, right? The courageous conversations, which are the conversations about those things that are hard to talk about but really important. Courageous conversations. So maybe it's about sitting down. Maybe jump starting has to begin with sitting down and having a courageous conversation. You know, I think, you know, this isn't going so well. We're not doing such a good job on this. We're not doing a good job, for example, on managing stress in our lives. We're not good at doing a good job, it seems like, on really supporting each other. How do you feel like I'm supporting you enough? Do you feel like, you know, I'm somebody you can talk to when you're feeling stressed? Having that conversation. My husband and I had a little tension recently. And, you know, we all, right? Anybody who's an exception to this, please let me know, because always like to hear about exceptions. But all of us at times, when we get into those little tiffs, right, and we know we're right, and, you know, we get real attached to our way of looking at things and our viewpoint and what we think needs to be done and what we think's wrong and so on, we get real attached to that. And we all kind of regress, right? We all do it. We all kind of go back there. But it's learning. So a big part of jump-starting a relationship is about learning how, when you get into those difficult times, the conflict times, the tension times, how can you move out of that? How can you shift gears? Right? Critical, critical skill. How can you shift gears? There are lots of different ways to shift gears. And again, it's kind of like the love language, and this is maybe the conflict repair language, we might call it. Because some ways of shifting gears when you're in a bad place work really well, and some don't work really well. And sometimes it depends on how your partner responds to it. So let me give you an example of that. One thing that people often use to kind of get things jump-started or get out of a tense place with their partner is using humor, right? Using humor. Now, humor, is that a good thing to use, do you think, when you're having a tense time to kind of get things jump-started? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? What do you think? Good or bad? What do you think?
Depends if the other person thinks it's funny.
Yes, yes. It depends, right? It depends on how you use humor. Because humor is very powerful. And humor can certainly go a long way to jump-starting a relationship. However, humor, because it's powerful, can also go the other direction, right? Okay? So especially if it's humor at the other person's expense, right? If you're using humor like, my gosh, look at you. You're like a crazy person, you know, or whatever. That usually doesn't go over too well. So humor at your own expense is probably going to work a lot better. But even humor about both of you, like, look at us. We're, you know, what's wrong with us? Depends on whether the other person thinks it's funny or not. So, again, just like with love languages, the getting out of a tense point, getting out of that rut, has to do with understanding what works for both of you, for both of you. So I started to tell you we had a little tension point recently, and you know, we both were a little bit into kind of being upset with each other. And afterwards, I came up to my husband and I said, you know, I regret that we had that tension. I regret that we had that tension between us. We are capable of better than that. We are capable of better than that. And that enabled us to talk about how we could do better when there's a little misunderstanding. Because it was really, you know, as most things are, it was a really small thing that kind of got miscommunicated and misunderstood. We are better than that. We can do better than that. How can we do better than that? Okay. Whoops, what happened to my signal here?
It's hibernating.
It's hibernating. What do I need to do? push any button here?
Power.
Power. Thank you. Pardon? Oh, I didn't hold it down long enough. So while he's fixing that, thanks for taking care of that. I'd like you to think about what are some of the things that you do, maybe on a routine basis or an occasional basis. What are the things you do in your own relationships? And I'd like to maybe hear some of your own experiences. What have you done that's worked? Or what has your partner done that when... You know, just to kind of get things moving, get things a little bit more energized. What are some of those things? Anybody have a thought they want to share? Hard to think about things, or hard to talk about them, I know, both. Thanks. Uh-huh. Thanks. Okay. So you actually needed time away, and that's a very interesting. I want to sort of piggyback on that idea, because sometimes time away can be just as important as time together, because it brings another energy into the relationship, right? So especially if I'm away and I'm doing something I really enjoy that's energizing me, that's nurturing me, and I can come back and I can bring that energy, and I can bring that vitality back into my relationship. And like you said, share that with your partner, right? So you bring that back and you're sharing that information. And the other thing that you mentioned was that it sounded like you each had some individual work that maybe you needed to do that wasn't about the relationship, but maybe was impacting the relationship and perhaps in ways you weren't aware of. And that taking the time to do that, to take care of something that you needed to work on or your partner needed to work on, that was really valuable. Okay, so a couple points there. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Anyone else have something that you want to share? Yes.
I learned to respect the difference and also give the other person some space for the difference.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, at the beginning of my marriage, I thought like,
uh-huh.
And then, like, we will have less conflict. But gradually, I found actually, it was hard even to change a person.
It is hard, isn't it?
Then I think I learned to, you know, just respect his way.
Mm-hmm.
Give him some space. And,
okay. Yeah, great. Great learning. And thank you for sharing that. So what you're talking about is such an important concept, isn't it? We talked about the importance of accepting the differences, valuing those differences, giving up trying to change the partner, right? And you also mentioned something else that I think is so critical in this area of relationship success, and that is looking at what our expectations are. Because one of the things that we know about happiness in general, not just happiness in a relationship, but just about happiness and satisfaction in life, that the degree of happiness that people report experience, is more a function of the difference between what they expect in their life and what they perceive that they actually have. Okay? What they expect and what they perceive they'll actually have. So I read some research about happiness recently, and they were looking at, for this study, they were looking at people who had come into some huge financial windfall, like winning a lottery or, you know, some long-lost uncle died and left him $1 million, something somewhat unexpected. And they, what they did was they were part of a group that they measured their happiness. They had a measure of happiness, you know, before. And then right afterwards, and then a year later, okay? What, any guess of what happens over that period of time?
The second time, I think they'd be disappointed more than the first.
Yes, yes. So what they saw was, let's say somebody was at, say, on a scale of 1 to 10. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was something like this. Say they were at happiness level 6, okay, in their life. About that amount of happiness and life satisfaction. They have this huge windfall. Something really wonderful happens, amazing, unexpected. Their happiness right after that goes way up to about a 9. A year later, when you look at how happy these people are reporting, how satisfied they are with their life, it's lower than it was initially, than where they started. So they don't just go back to where they were, they actually go lower. Most people go lower. They're less happy. And if you've ever heard people talk about people who've won a lottery or come into a huge windfall, and sometimes they're interviewed on TV, and you hear them, one of the things people will often talk about is how their expectations change. All my problems will be solved, right? My relationship, and we do that in relationships, don't we? Well, once we have kids, or then once the kids are raised out of the house, or once we get the house paid off, or once I finish my graduate degree, or once you finish your internship and you're in a more stable work situation, or once we move here, or once we move there, or closer to family, or once something happens, then we'll be happy. Then our relationship will be good. Then we'll be able to really enjoy, right? And it doesn't happen. And their expectation that it's going to be so different actually leads many people to feel less satisfied than they had been before. And so what happens in relationships is we bring into a relationship certain expectations. And most of us are not even aware. I don't know that you consciously were aware of that. You're probably just like, of course, that's the way it is. I had a couple I was working with once, and they came in. They were in a crisis. I'd seen them a few times. They came into a session, total crisis. This is what the crisis was about. It's just interesting what gets people's attention. And the crisis was about it. It had been Halloween the week before, and they were newly married, and she had gone out, and she had gotten all these pumpkins and these carving knives, and she had all this stuff. When her husband came home, she had everything set out, you know, the newspapers on the table with the pumpkins and the carving knives, and then she had the cookie pans out to toast or whatever you do with the pumpkin seeds, right? You put them in the oven. And she was so excited that it was their first Halloween together. All right, she was so excited that this was going to be this fun quality time together. And he walks in the house, and she says, "Look what I did." And he goes, "Oh, I hate to carve pumpkins. They're all slimy. I don't want to do it. You go ahead," right? This was their crisis. And it's easy to look at that and say, "Oh, isn't that silly?" Or, you know, of course that happened. But we all do that. We all come with expectations that we put on the other person, sometimes not even realizing that we're doing it, and then we're disappointed. So it's not that we don't want to have expectations, but we need to be clear on them and where do they come from, right? A lot of them come from our own families. So we come with when we get into a relationship with somebody, we come with certain expectations that, you know, this is the way a family works, based on how we were raised, perhaps, or maybe we're looking for the opposite of how we were raised. Well, when I have my family, we're going to do it this way because, you know, we didn't have that in my family. Or my husband is a widower. He was married for 35 years. To one person, right? So he has a model in his head of what marriage is that's based on that marriage, right? And not our marriage. And so that initially was a real transition for him because it was like, well, this is what you do in a marriage. You know, in his mind, this is what marriage is. And I keep saying, no, that was that marriage, not this marriage. But it's about those expectations and what we come in with, you know. And I'm thinking, I'm expecting, well, you know, we're already into our careers, we already have adult children, I have a grandchild, another one on the way, you know, so my expectation is, oh, he's going to be, come right in and become grandpa, right, to my little grandchild. Well, he has done that, but that was my expectation. Of course he's going to love being grandpa, right? And he's kind of going, oh, I don't know, you know, I haven't been around little kids for a long time. So part of that is in terms of really that first one, admitting, it's being able to say, you know what, I realize I have certain expectations here that I'm putting on you. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. But you came to that awareness yourself. That's really good. Second one, so important. Take the initiative to create change, even if. And so what is the even if? Okay. Well, I hear this often when I work with couples. And it'll go some version of, well, I would do this if my partner did something first. I'm waiting for them. Or I did this, you know, I brought home flowers last week and then nothing happened, so I'm not going to do anything more. It's like, I think a lot of us have this sort of scorecard in our mind. It's like, I've done my 50%. Right now it's their turn to do something. The problem is that I am so aware of everything I've done, right? All the things I've done, all the efforts I've done, that my 50% may look like 20% to my partner. So what I like to think about and talk about with people is think about that your share is at least 80%. At least 80, maybe 100, but let's say at least 80. So if both of you are contributing at a level of about 80%, hopefully there's going to be some overlap there. And hopefully it's going to feel kind of in balance, right? But the taking the initiative to create change, even if, doing what I can, because, and you said it so well, I realized I couldn't change anybody. I couldn't change my partner. So what can I do to make things better? What can I do? Say the three little words often, and probably those should be reversed, because I am sorry is probably just as important, not more so, I love you. And I maybe add one there, and I appreciate, this is longer than three words, but, and I appreciate you, and fill in the blank. I am sorry that I da-da-da-da. I love you, and the third one, I appreciate you for whatever. And how often is, I was working with a group of managers one time, and we were talking about, you know, those positive reinforcements for employees, and one manager raised her hand, and she said, well, how often do I have to do that? Right? How often do I have to? Sometimes people will ask that same question, but how often do I have to? I told her I loved her when we got married. Isn't that enough? My goodness. Did she forget already? It's some things you can't do too often, right? Some things you can't do too often. So if you haven't said it lately, maybe it's time. Both of them. Laugh together, humor together. Laughing together is such a wonderful activity. It releases all kinds of great chemicals in our bodies. It gets our energy flowing. It gets our blood flowing. Laughing together. Doing something silly together gets you laughing. When's the last time you did something silly? Maybe you learned something new together. Maybe you went out and played miniature golf or learned how to kayak or just something silly, something different. Participating in physical activities together is a wonderful activity to do together. We recently learned how to ballroom dance. Well, I shouldn't say that. We recently tried to learn how to ballroom dance, right? I'm still working 1, 2, 3, you know, the foxtrot. But it was great fun because we were both learning something we didn't know how to do and we were learning it together. And so we could just be silly with it. Search for the positive in each other. So easy to, again, that remember that interaction, 5 positives. At least to every negative. Practice random acts of kindness, the unexpected, doing the unexpected. And we've talked a lot about making time together a priority. Making time together a priority. Setting aside that time by way of letting your partner know you're important to me. You're important because I'm probably one of our most valuable commodities. So I'm noticing the time, and I did want to leave a little bit of time for some questions. So we do have a few minutes here. So anybody have any questions or observations or thoughts that you want to share? Love to hear them. Yes.
How can you have family influence in a positive way by saying that
Can you repeat the question, too?
Okay.
You're not really, I mean, understanding that they might care about something that's going on, but it's kind of what I'm just looking
for. Okay. Okay. Let me...
Do that.
Yeah, well, I don't know your family, so it may or may not be. Let me repeat the question, make sure I have it, and also for the audio here. So what you're asking is, how do you respectfully tell family to back off when they're interfering, right? Okay, good question. And I think clearly you want to do it in a way that's respectful and that's kind. But it sounds like what's behind your question is maybe a sense that some extended family are kind of interfering in your business with your partner. Yeah. A couple of things I would say about that. One is I think you can say it in a respectful way, and it starts with acknowledging the concern and the caring that's behind that. So something like, I really appreciate your concern for us. You know, we, even better, we really appreciate your concern for us. That means a lot to us. And I just want you to know that we're doing fine. And, you know, if they knew, perhaps they know there's some issue that you're dealing with, and we're working on, you know, we're working things out, you know, if they know there's something. So the first part starts with acknowledging the intention, which is to try to help. And the problem, and I think you kind of alluded to this, is that when family gets involved, it usually ends up not being helpful. So the other side of that, too, is to be really cautious and careful about when there is tension or conflict in a relationship of not going to them. Because it's very tempting to do that. You go there because you know you're going to get support and they're going to be on your side and you get all this wonderful compassionate listening. And then you go back to your partner and you work it out. But your family member were not part of that working out process, right? And so they're still left with hearing all of these things about your partner, and of course they care about you and they want to protect you, and so that is the situation that I find most often interferes in a relationship, is when at times of conflict when somebody goes to a family member or to a good friend. And of course we want to do that, but I think it's really important to leave those things within the relationship. Okay. Did that address what you were asking?
In general.
Now, certainly, if it's a situation where there are safety concerns, where there, you know, is violence or aggression in a relationship, I'm not talking about those kinds of relationships. I'm talking about a relationship that's basically, you know, with a good person, but you're having conflict. But certainly if there are safety issues or you know, it's major kinds of issues like that, like aggression in a relationship, you probably do need to go outside and get help and support. But be careful about going for every little thing, because you know you're going to get the understanding. It's like, oh, my gosh, oh, he did that. I can't believe he did that to you. And then that turns them against your partner. All right, so cautious of that. Rosalie, you had your hand up. Did you have a question?
I liked your term, a courageous contributor.
Courageous conversation, oh, yeah.
Just being courageous in a relationship, and by being the one to say, you know, I think I made a mistake, I think you were right, something like that. And how courageous that is and how it starts an upward spiral.
And it's amazing how hard that is to do. It is so hard to do. Oh, okay. It is so hard to do, but so important to do. And I think one last thing with that I always want to put in when I talk about relationships, because I hear a lot of people come to me and say, my partner doesn't understand me. My partner doesn't listen to me. All right? We all felt that way sometimes. Very, very simple way to get your partner to listen to you. Anybody know what that is? Simple. Really simple. You can start doing it today when you get walk out of this room, whether it's in a work situation or a personal relationship or family relationship. Easiest way to get somebody to listen to you is to listen to them, to their point of view, until they feel completely understood. When they feel completely understood, that's when they're ready to listen to you. That's when they're ready. So a really good phrase to use is if your partner's talking about something, because when that happens, right, what do we want to do? We're listening to them talk. We're rehearsing in our mind what we're going to say to convince them how wrong they are, right? So very simple thing to do is you just listen, and then when you think they're finished and you're ready to put your 2 cents in there or 4 cents, you say, do you feel like I'm understanding you enough? Do you feel understood? Do you feel like I'm understanding you enough? And that's not, okay, I heard you, I understand. No, it's, do you feel that I'm understanding you enough? Then that's when they're ready to listen. So powerful, powerful tool to use at home or at work. Listening for complete understanding until they feel understood. Not until you think you understand them, until they feel understood. They're the ones who determine that, okay? I see our time is up. Do we have time for one last question or comment?
Yes, one last. That you've heard of, that you know of, religion, sharing a faith or whatnot, plays in longevity?
Okay, so the question has to do with about sharing a religious faith and the role that that plays. I'm sure there have been studies done on that. I don't have the statistics on that at hand. I think that from what I've seen and what I've read, that the biggest challenge with that comes when there are children. So what I find is often people will marry of different faiths, and they'll think, well, that's fine. He can practice his religion. I'll practice mine. We respect each other. No problem. And then when kids come along, or if kids come along, all of a sudden it's a different matter. It's like, well, wait a minute. And what I hear sometimes people will say is, well, my partner, you know, they don't even go to services. They never even go to services anyway. They never even observe their religious, you know, observances. So I don't think it'll be a problem. When kids come along, people's religion gets a whole lot more important often. So the best predictor of success when there are that kind of a difference, which is a very significant difference, is that you need to be talking about it and talking about, how are we going to do this? How are we going to celebrate Hanukkah and Christmas? Or how do you feel about, you know, doing a Passover Seder? Or how do you feel about having a Christmas tree? What are we going to do with that? And what about our family? How are they going to? So it's really that conversation, like I was talking about before, about listening for understanding of those areas, because that's a perfect example of a problem that may not be solvable, but needs to be constantly, constantly open for discussion. And do it ahead of time. Don't wait thinking, oh, it'll all work out, because that's what we do. It'll all work out. It'll be fine. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for coming here. And thank you for those of you who are at your desks watching us. Appreciate the time.
Thank you very much. And to the people in the audience who are watching the webcast, thank you very much. Dr. Goshen, it was excellent. We loved your presentation, and we thank you so much for coming to UCSD to share your wisdom with us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Bye-bye. Thank you all for coming. And